everybody. I'm Rob Alley.
And I'm Zeke Tucker. And we are the hosts of Cinema Snack Bar.
It's the ultimate podcast for people who love movies and food. We're going to talk about the films we love and the foods that help inform them. Each week, we're going to watch a favorite movie, a bona fide classic, or an audience pick. And we're going to make or try a relevant food from that movie.
Be sure to follow us on Instagram at Cinema Snack Bar and visit us online at cinemasnackbar.com.
And most importantly, smash that subscribe button. Let's go, No, I'm not Jake Paul.
Let's go, family.
Episodes released bi-weekly starting March 7th. We'll see you guys then.
Get your popcorn ready.
Turn up the radio and sing along. It's time for another great song. This is the Great Song Podcast.
Season's greetings and welcome once again to the Great Song Podcast. I'm Rob Alley.
I am JP Mosier.
And we're here to celebrate the greatest songs in modern music history. We're going to tell you what makes them great, why we think they're awesome, and why you should too. JP, how you doing today, man?
I am doing fantastic. So I'm super excited today because Rob is up. We're doing episodes and we're going to hear a guitar legend tonight. But speaking of guitar legends, we have another guitar slash keyboard slash musical legend on with us today.
Yes, we
One of the greatest musicians around, and we are so excited to dive into all things about this artist. Rob, do you want to tell them who we're talking with, talking about, who we get to hang out with today?
Today, we present a very special episode talking about and sitting down with Mr. Neil Morse. Let's go. I feel better about everything immediately after listening to that. Neil Morse, if you are unfamiliar with the name, you know, we've done a few episodes on like progressive rock, and we've talked about the prog rock side gig economy that's like, you know, everybody that's in prog rock bands, you can't be in just one.
Right.
You can't be in one prog project. You've got to be in 15.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that
some
is,
with the same people, some with different people. You bring your friends sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes you trade friends.
Yeah. And so I think Neil Morse is the king. He's in more projects than anybody I know of, right? And he's like beloved by everyone. He is an absolute monster on two instruments.
Yep.
He's a monster on guitar, monster on keys. Obviously, he's a great songwriter, great vocalist, but he has his fingers in more pies than than any other musician, maybe on planet Earth.
Yeah.
Right? He's just, and everything he does, he crushes. Everything he does is he's, you know, great at. And one of the things that I love about Neil Morse is he is one of like maybe five guys in history. I haven't sat down and done the math, okay? But this is my opinion and theory, okay? He's one of like five guys in history to convert to Christianity from a hard rock background and keep making cool music.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. It's like Kagi, Neil Morse, maybe Mark Farner, depending on who you ask. I don't really know who else, right? That just keeps making just music that's awesome.
Yeah.
And so, like, because of that, Neil Morse hits like every level of my musical and personal self, you know. If he would just do a concept record about baseball, my life would be totally complete.
That's hilarious.
In him, you know?
Wearing a Braves jersey.
Yeah, that's all we need.
And the bat is a Star Wars lightsaber. It's like...
Yeah. So there's so much to talk about with Neil, and we have a pretty lengthy interview. Yeah. So our sort of... coverage might be a little shorter than usual because we want to leave time for an interview without leaving you guys with a 2-hour episode.
Yeah.
But I just want to talk through a few things about Neil and get you through some of the many different ways that you can experience his music. But I'll go ahead and tell you now, and I'll probably talk about this several times. The best way that you can experience, by the way, that song was Reaching for the Sky by Transatlantic. I didn't even mention that yet, but that's Reaching for the Sky by Transatlantic from their recent album, The Breath of Life. From their recent album, The Absolute Universe, The Breath of Life, the abridged version, which is on streaming. If you want the full version and you want the best way to experience all of Neil's music, you need to download the Waterfall app. The Waterfall app is basically Neil's streaming service for Radiant Records and Neil and many of his related artists. And it's a monthly subscription, and you get everything. And you get everything plus. So like a lot of his stuff and a lot of albums that he's associated with, they're either not available on streaming platforms because they're on this, right? They wanted a better situation for the writers and artists, and that's fine. And so they just went and did their own thing. And so they wanted a better situation, but not only do you get some stuff that you would like look for and you go, "Oh, it's not on Spotify, it's not on Apple Music. Where can I find it?" You can either go, on his website, buy the physical thing, or you can subscribe on the Waterfall app and you get stuff that is either not streaming, or you'll have several albums that are like the album is there so that you know it exists, but it'll have one track and then the rest is hidden from the streaming services. You get all that on the Waterfall app, and you get bonus material that just doesn't exist anywhere else, alternate versions, demos, just straight up new songs and material that isn't being released somewhere else. So if you're like, "Dude, I need more of this," if Neil is a new thing for you, first of all, congratulations. I'm so happy for you that you get to enter into this part of your life now. But if you want all that you can have, if you want the full fire hose of Neil Morse, then get the Waterfall app and subscribe, and you'll get, I promise you, all that you can handle and much, much more. Hello.
Much more.
Hey-o.
That's so good.
Let me bring that around. All right. So yes, what we played you was Transatlantic, for which he is a vocalist and guitarist, and he plays keys and one of like 85 different bands and projects that you can find him as a part of. And I guess I'll just mention
a few. Start talking.
Just start a few. So he was part of the original Spock's Beard lineup. If you know Spock's Beard, they're kind of a legendary side project of, they're just one of those things that if you listen to prog, you know who Spock's Beard is, and so he and his brother started Spock's Beard, together. And then, post like conversion, he left Spock's Beard and started doing other stuff. He's in Transatlantic, which is one of, 85 projects that he's a part of with drummer Mike Portnoy, and other musicians.
And that's who I'll do the Meet the Band section on. I'll do it on Transatlantic.
Okay. So. And that we chose Transatlantic because that song is awesome. That was Reaching for the Sky. And they've just released a new, live DVD that you can check out. And you can get from Transatlantic, there. He's also part of a Beatles tribute band, or not a tribute, a Beatles cover band, I'll say, called Yellow Matter Custard, with Paul Gilbert and Matt Bissonette and Mike Portnoy.
Just a couple name drops there.
It's like, yeah, like you walk onto a stage and you see those four guys. And
you don't expect Beatles.
Exactly. How many guesses do you have to take before you go, "Oh, they're about to play Revolver," you know what I mean? They're about to hit us with a little Sergeant Peppers. But I think though there is a connection because Neil Morse does maybe some of my, or definitely some of my favorite like concept albums.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So it's not too far away to like hop on stage and expect to hear them maybe do some Sgt. Pepper's, but like, but anyway, that's just a funny thing. You go, oh, Mike Portnoy, you know, Neil Morse, Paul Gilbert, definitely a Beatles cover band, you know. Let's see. He's in Flying Colors. I'm going to stop and park here for a second on Flying Colors. Flying Colors is a project with Dave LaRue on bass, Casey McPherson on vocals, who I love.
Yeah.
Steve Morse, no relation,
not related.
But Steve Morse, who you might know from Dixie Dregs, Kansas. You know his playing style when you hear it. You know that's Steve Morse and Mike Portnoy. And the Flying Colors project was basically they went, okay, we have all these amazing chops and this musical capability. Let's rein in some of the more extreme elements of prog songwriting and think about it through a more straightforward pop rock sensibility from the writing perspective and see what happens.
Yeah, if you want more of for those of y'all that aren't super prog fans, but you want to listen to, this may be a little more palatable
for you. Yeah. So, like, let's go. This is the first track on their first album, Flying Colors. It's called Blue Ocean. I absolutely adore this album. And this song is a perfect kickoff for it. Now you're getting Neil on keyboards here. That's Steve Morse on guitar.
In a momentary place, it was written on the wall, but it never really came to us at all.
Now there you're getting Casey McPherson on vocals.
It's an elementary thing.
You're gonna get Neil on the second verse.
To the call that will lead us to the great unending hall. With the wheel of emotion.
And there's Neil.
That is always turning, landing where it may. As the world moves forward to a new beginning, still I feel this way.
Then hit it with this hooky chorus.
So dude, good.
I just all day long,
yeah,
I'll listen to that. One of my favorite tracks on there is a track called Kayla, which is
great name,
great name, right? The solo on it, it's a solo by Neil Morse. I mean, I'm sorry, it's a solo by Steve Morse, but I'm gonna play it here just because I love it, and we never get to talk about this album. So this section right here is very Neil Morse, right? These layered vocals all over the place, hopping in and out. And we're going to take it into just this blistering melodic solo. Come on.
Dude.
And then this chorus. Dude, yeah. That song is perfect. Yeah. And that solo has every element of a great solo.
Yeah.
It's got melody,
speed,
memorable melody, speed, technical wizardry,
weirdness.
It's got exactly, that's about exactly what I was about to say. It's got just enough, like, what the crap are you doing? that resolves itself pleasantly.
Yeah.
It's got everything you could possibly want in a guitar solo. So I love it. So check out Flying Colors, just one of Neil Morse's great many side projects. The guy just lives and breathes, you know, awesome hard rock and progressive rock music. Then you've got the Neil Morse Band, okay? Not to be confused with Neil Morse. Different, right? So there's Neil Morse albums. You can go get Neil Morse albums. Mm-hmm. But you've got the Neil Morse Band, which is Neil, Mike Portnoy, Randy George, Eric Gillette, and Bill Hubauer. As I understand it, the Neil Morse Band itself evolved as a way to be able to have a full-time, like, traveling band instead of him having to put bands together when he would, like, go over to Europe or that kind of thing and find, you know, it's just like, this is the crew that's going to be, you know, whatever. And so then they have several albums together as just the Neil Morse Band. Probably my favorite one, and this is not available on streaming services as far as I know, is called The Similitude of a Dream. And it is based on, this is one of those concept record things. We're going to talk about concept records a lot. This is based on a classic Christian novel called The Pilgrim's Progress. Mm-hmm. And by John Bunyan. And it's like...
Not to be confused with Paul Bunyan.
Not to be confused. No, not at all to be confused with Paul Bunyan. But it's kind of it's not like a direct allegory. It's just one of those things, you know, like C.S. Lewis would just write random books about space or whatever.
Yeah.
Pilgrim's Progress is like that. It has like elements of whatever, but it's not direct like allegory. But anyway, it's this long story. But the album is long too. The album is like a whole journey. And by the time you get... I remember the first time I listened to it, I had to wait. I had to get it and then wait until I had a long drive. So that I could listen to the whole thing. Cause it's like 2.5 hours, maybe more than that. I mean, it's very long.
Yeah.
It's multiple CDs and, you know, whatever.
We talk a lot with him about like track length there. I mean, the Kaleidoscope album, the first thing, it's a 24-minute song. Like kickstarted album. It's
right.
So it's an investment. You don't want to be like, I'm just going from here to the gas station.
Yeah.
You're going to be like, I'm going from here on a trip. Like you said, it's great traveling music.
But it's so rewarding to listen to it all in one sitting, to take it all in. Yeah. I remember the pulling into my last stop, but waiting for the last song to finish and just crying. It was such a relief.
That's awesome.
The last song is at the end of this whole journey. You know what I mean? The way it comes back was such a relief. I just started crying, dude. But let me play you a couple favorite tracks off of The Similitude of a Dream. This is, let me start with this one. This is called City of Destruction. This is just... He has this way of doing awesome stuff and then getting to the chorus and kicking it up a notch.
I agree. It's elevated choruses.
Yeah.
Like that's his choruses are elevated.
Yeah. He's going to hit it again, do that little teaser, but then take it to the chorus. Dude. just so much.
Goblets of rock elevated everywhere.
Fully elevated. And then you get everything on this album. This album covers every gamut. You get everything from that to this is Freedom Song that is vocal band, harmony, Crosby, Stills, Nash, you know, R.I.P. David Crosby. Let me skip ahead just a little bit.
And a lot of the tracks we'll play will be heavy electric stuff, but the guy owns an acoustic guitar too, right, as you can see, and it's good.
Yeah. Just these, you know, I love it. One more from that album that I just love. This riff never gets old. This is called The Man in the Iron Cage. Is your Led Zeppelin fix.
That's great, Rip.
Bro.
That's so good. I've been locked in this place for a thousand
years. I used to believe like you. I used to be someone who showed to others the way, but now I'm lost. Major melody over that minor riff. I just love it. I just love it. So that's all from The Similitude of a Dream, those three by Neil Morse Band. Then you've got DeVirgilio Morse and Jennings, which is more of like acoustic vocal band mm-hmm. stuff. You've got several solo albums that are just branded Neil Morse. Some of them are just songs, right? Just to hear some songs. Some of them are like Christian songs, and some of them are like worship albums. Mm-hmm. So like he's covering every like gamut of, you know, that you could possibly do as a writer yep. who lives in like a Christian
space. He's
living
Rob's dream.
Yeah, it's truly. I just want to be Neil Morse. I want to be as good, as cool, and as I don't know, as anything as Neil Morse. then you've got Morse Portnoy George, which is most of the Neil Morse band, or like the core of the Neil Morse band, but they have recorded three cover albums together, including a cover of one of our favorite old gags. Hold on. You're crying now. That's right. It's Baker Street.
It's for you season oneers.
Yeah. Anyway, gotta love that. Can't go wrong with a cover, right. Good cover of Baker Street. And then he's got I don't know. I probably missed some. He's probably got more.
There's tons of stuff. Yeah, it's good. But for the sake of time, we'll keep it moving. Yeah.
And one of the common threads you hear is we keep mentioning Mike Portnoy, who is, you know, founding member of Dream Theater. He's been part of Avenged Sevenfold.
Winery Dogs.
Winery Dogs, like, you know, who we just talked to Richie Kotzen last week from Winery Dogs, and Billy Sheehan last season. So we're two out of three on Winery Dogs.
That's right.
One of these days we'll get that third one in here. We'll try. But I love that they have this connection that Neil Morse and Mike Portnoy do so much together. As a matter of fact, when you and I went to see John Petrucci in Nashville, mm-hmm. We saw Neil Morse there at the show.
As a fan,
to watch the show. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He was just there, and we were like, oh, of course he's here. Cause Mike Portnoy was playing drums with John Petrucci, you know, for the first time live since his departure from Dream Theater. And so we're like, of course, that's so cool that they have like a bromance, you know what I mean? Together. I also love that Portnoy, who, as he once described himself on Twitter, puts the ish in Jewish, is like neck deep in all these deeply and often very niche Christian projects with Neil. I don't know exactly what it says about the two of them, but I love something about what it says about the two of them. Cool. You know?
Yeah, same.
I love it. Neil has all these great projects. I just some other of these projects of his. First, why don't we do Meet the Band, and then I'm just going to talk about a few more projects that I love.
Hey, let's meet the band. It's time to meet the band. Hey, mama, let's meet the band.
Let's all meet the band.
Hey! All right, we're going to meet the band of Transatlantic.
Okay.
We talked a lot about Neil, so we'll save him for the interview. Okay. On drums that Rob hinted at, Mike Portnoy. I don't know what to tell you to go listen to of him, so I'll say go to Live at Budokan with Dream Theater from 2004. He plays everything from the stage to the mic stands, comes down, and then he takes it to the audience to a guy who finally, he's not the best at rhythm. He called somebody up on stage, yeah, and he picked the wrong guy, and then they finally get it with shaving a haircut, two bits. So that's but so good. The Glass Prison, anything from the Liquid Tension Experiment. I mean, yeah, just Mike Portnoy.
He's another one of these. Like, he rivals Neil Morse for number of side projects.
Exactly.
For sure.
The other guitar player, Mr. Stolt. I think it's pronounced. Is it Roine? Or is it...
How's it spelled again?
R-O-I-N-E. I don't ever know how to pronounce his first name.
Is it Ryan somehow?
It may be. I don't know. Anyway, this guy's good. Guitars, vocal, keyboards. So listen to Flower King's Garden of Dreams solo on YouTube. Go to YouTube and find it because it'll break down the solo. This is Flower King's Garden of Dreams solo. And this is a good introduction to Mr. Stolt.
Rocking the Parker Fly. So pleasant.
Yeah.
It's like if Carlos Santana was good. I had to throw that dig
That's
in.
Good.
It's been too long.
Anyway, I thought this would be a nice little palate cleanser for the blisteringness that we've had. But it's so good.
Let's go.
That's right.
Oh, I love that.
It's so good. On bass and vocals, Pete Trawavis. Band, he's in Idson's Children. They have a song called The Tempest. But Marillion's been my favorite discovery of them. And I know that guy we hung out with the other day, Michael, is a big Marillion fan. And I've really enjoyed getting to learn a little bit more about them. Steve Rothery is a really good guitar player, and Steve Hogarth is the perfect vocalist for Marillion. So check them out if you get a chance. But Pete plays Laney amplification, Ibanez bass guitars, Laney B2 power amps and cabs. He's a Laney guy, the RWB 3000 combo. He also plays a Fender P bass, Fender Jazz bass. He even has some Squire stuff that he still plays, which I like to see when people still break out the Squire they don't have to.
Yeah.
I saw him play Squire Jazz the other day on something. I was like, and that's fairly recent. Like, most people graduate from that. It's nice to see them still getting some love there.
You know, sometimes you just find an instrument that you just
feels
love.
Right.
Yeah, it's just the one.
Feels right on your hands. So that's the Transatlantic Band. That's the one that we...
If we were to talk about every associated...
It'd be a 9-hour episode. Yeah.
It would be as long as one of Neil's concept records. So speaking of, I asked you to think about your favorite concept albums because it is one of the hallmarks of like progressive rock. Particularly, it's not limited to progressive rock, but you definitely expect some concept albums or at least some lengthy sections of albums that might be, you know, all, you know, tied together. And if we, I'm sure we've talked about this before, but basically a concept album is one that carries a theme through the whole album. And, you know, among the most notable would be Sgt. Pepper's.
And Tommy, even, The Who.
Yeah, Tommy by The Who is also one of the great
Wall.
Ones. It's basically a put together story or a even, you know, more modern stuff like I Am Sasha Fierce by Beyonce, where she's sort of playing a character within the album, you know what I mean? Yep. Outside of her, outside of her normal thing. So I'm just going to have you name, you know.
I'll go ahead and throw, I mean, I feel like we're both going to say this one, so I'll go Dream Theater, Metropolis Part 2, Scenes from Memory.
Scenes from Memory,
it's going to be mine. That's the one that I feel like we would both put, so I'll go ahead and say that one.
Yeah, it just tells a big, big, long, interconnected story. Yeah. And in the prog world, it's often a very intricate story or even a fantastical story, you know what I mean? Or a fantasy story, I'll say. Like Glasshammer just did... they just released the third in a trilogy of albums. So it's not just one concept album. It was three connected concept albums.
Yeah.
And the Skullagrim trilogy.
That's awesome.
And it's insane, dude. You got to check that out by Glass Hammer. Definitely one of my favorites as well. Then you got stuff like The Wall. You know what I mean? Pink Floyd. I didn't know. Did you know that American Idiot is a concept album?
I saw that. I did not know that. Like, I know the Green Day stuff. And yeah. Like, but I didn't ever pick up on that. Like, I don't. If you're like, name your concept album, that's not one that popped in my head as a concept album.
I didn't realize, but apparently it is. I had no idea.
I've got a couple others.
Go for it. Yeah.
The one that I figured you would say. You would put would be Kilroy by Styx because it's got Mr. Roboto and it's definitely a concept album, but I don't like it.
Okay.
So that's one that I should have put but didn't.
Yeah.
I'll list a couple here. Captain Fantastic, the Elton John album. Yep. I love that one. I love that whole project. That one's the one with Someone Saved My Life Tonight on it. But one that I think my favorite, other than the Dream Theater one and other than the biggies like Sgt. Pepper's and The Wall, is Running on Empty by Jackson Browne.
Okay.
So that's like that's the story of life on the road. You know, that's the band story. Mm. And everything from the drummer with, anyway, I don't want to talk too much about it because I've got a take on that album and something that I'm going to use later.
Okay.
That for
we're going to cover it one day.
Well, and I've got a hot take that I can't wait to talk about that I've pocketed. But Running on Empty, Jackson Browne.
Okay. Yeah. The Kinks had some. Arthur, The Kinks. You've got Smile by Brian Wilson, 2004.
I saw that Control by Janet Jackson was listed as a concept album on one of the lists, which I know that's got Nasty and What Have You Done For Me Lately, but I never would have picked that as a concept album either.
Yeah, me neither.
Kind of similar to the Green Day thing.
Yeah, some of these are, I haven't listened to them enough to be able to realize why they're concept records or whatever. Apparently, The Suburbs by Arcade Fire is listed as a concept record. Rush has several.
Yeah, 2112.
Is probably the most popular of theirs. But even Pet Sounds by the Beach Boys is considered the first concept record. Mm-hmm. And we've talked before about how that kind of inspired the Beatles to make Sgt. Pepper's, which is maybe considered the greatest concept record of all time because it's considered by many the greatest record of all time. So great, those Pet Sounds and that one kind of jockey for that top spot with a lot of people. Dark Side of the Moon, another great. Pink Floyd has several. Animals. Mm-hmm.
We mentioned the Wall. So.
Yeah, The Wall. Yeah, so, several of those. Ziggy Stardust, David Bowie. One that I'd kind of forgotten about, but apparently Monster by R.E.M. is a concept record. The one that had What's the Frequency, Kenneth?
Okay.
That one's a concept record as well. Desperado by the Eagles is listed as a concept record. So I don't know. Janelle Monáe, The Arch Android, 2010. So anyway, it's great. I love a good concept.
Yeah, me too.
Same. Something that is.
I like the story. I like getting in.
Yeah,
and out.
You get a story and try and find the threads, and then in a lot of it's you're following these characters and these complex stories, I should say.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. The freaking Metropolis Part Two is probably the one that I've listened to the most in my life.
Same.
And it's got like. Time travel and alternate personalities and all this.
I can picture Victoria. I've never met her.
Yeah.
But I know who I see her in my mind.
Yeah. Absolutely. When I'm safe in the light that surrounds
me, right.
I can picture it. Yeah.
She's gone forever. Only memories remain. But so that's good. I've got to stump the genius.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. Let's stump the genius.
Stump the genius. Stump the genius. Stump the genius. It's time to stump the genius.
Jump up and take your part.
I feel like I'm going to be easily stumped today.
All right. I was going to do a Morse code game, but I thought that I couldn't put it together. That's way too hard.
It's SOS and that's all. That's
so
all
I'm going to do. Let's do
Morse code.
Let's do name this Neil.
Okay.
Let's set a timer.
Name that Neil.
Another one of these. Let's do a timer. I wrote down five. And I need to think of some keywords for him, but let's do five of them. How many seconds you think for five? Five for seconds each? 25?
Five Neils?
30 seconds?
Let's do 30. 30 feels 30 feels generous. Let's go 25.
Okay, let's go 25. We got 5 seconds.
Five one every 5 seconds.
One every 5 seconds. Yep. There we go. Famous Neils.
Ready, set, go.
Walked on the moon. Armstrong. Astronaut. Sweet Caroline. Give this engagement
Diamond.
Ring. Yeah.
I'm going to nail this.
Drummer for Rush.
Peart.
Yeah, Peart. Brand of shampoo. Not old, but Crosby, Stills, Nash, and
Young.
Guitars for Journey.
Sean.
Yep. Sean. Boom. Nailed
yeah.
that.
Ding, 7 seconds ding, 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 to
ding.
Go.
Dude, that was awesome. Well done.
All right.
Neil Armstrong.
But man.
Neil Diamond. Neil Peart. Peart.
Never
Neil
really
Young.
Thought about so many
Neil
Neils
Sean.
Before. Yeah.
Yeah.
Neil Sadaka.
Neil Sadaka.
What other Neil? Yeah, that's right.
I didn't write him down. What other Neils we got? Neil O'Donnell, quarterback.
Yeah. Well done. Well done. Okay. Let's see. I'm going to highlight just because I love playing this stuff, and I'm hoping to inspire some of you who may not know Neil
Morse.
Like,
we're going to keep this a really short front part, and then we played like 93 clips.
Yeah. Come on.
Let's enjoy this. This is good.
But I want to just highlight a couple more things that will hopefully inspire you to, to go listen to some more, because he's got some just amazing, amazing stuff. This is from, this is fun. This is from his album One, which is probably the album of his that I've listened to the most. And it's another big sprawling epic. I mean, they're all just big sprawling epics, but there's a couple of those. Just the overture in itself is this big long thing, and it has all these beautiful parts to it. But this is a really cool thing that I think is a little different from what we've listened to. This is called Author of Confusion, and if you know that term, like if you've been to church long enough, you've heard that term used as like,
yeah,
God is not the author of confusion, but I want you to listen to this because it plays so well. Of course, you've got this furious instrumental stuff, but what I really love about this track is the vocals. Let me get to them. It's him wailing on keys. We haven't really heard that yet. We're in odd time signatures.
Yeah, competing, I was about to say, not
time
a lot of
signatures.
4/4 with that.
Mm-mm. Then we get this.
Author of confusion, you play inside my mind and I want to run. But where can I hide? Author of confusion, your aim is to confound.
Put on headphones, folks.
Yeah. Which is up or down? Author of confusion, you play inside my mind and I want to run. But where can I hide? Author of confusion, you
that's crazy, Dick.
Chase thoughts, starts running around. Never find their place. Author of confusion, your aim is to confound.
So brilliant.
Up or down, low or high, the truth is I don't know.
Take that, take six. It's freaking awesome.
Right? And just the concept, like, that it literally becomes what you're talking about.
So
you know
good.
What I mean?
It's,
I just,
that's,
oh
that's
gosh,
good.
I love that. That might be the last thing I'm going to play because it's so
that's
cool.
That's great.
But
yeah, that's tough to talk.
Check it out. There's so much greatness to be discovered if you don't know Neil Morse. If you do know Neil Morse, I guarantee, I know Danny Wade is listening right now, mm-hmm, and he's been begging us to talk Neil Morse since season one.
Yeah.
He's like a day one listener of the show and the biggest Neil Morse fan in the world. And so, Danny, I hope we've done you proud and made you happy today. But if you are new to Neil and these side projects, go check out all of them,
because yeah,
you're gonna find multiples of them that you're just going to absolutely love. If you love...
And we'll follow up with you in June and see how things are going, because you're going to go deep.
Yeah. If you just love great heavy rock and riff rock, mm-hmm, melodic rock, it's just so good.
Yeah.
You can't go wrong with Neil Morse ever, ever, ever.
Yeah.
So... we're going to take you right now to an interview with the man himself, Mr. Neil Morse, one of the coolest opportunities for an interview that we've had. And he's literally back, like, here in your backyard. Like, he lives very close by, actually, which is even cooler. But so we're going to go to that interview in just a second. But first, stop what you're doing right now. Put down your everything. Put down that Switch controller. Put down your subway ticket. I don't care if you're about to hop on the subway, whatever you're doing. And get
I
out
thought you meant like the subway sandwich ticket.
Oh,
like,
sure. Yeah. Like, I'm about to get my sandwich. Here's my ticket.
Here's my
Can
ticket.
I have
my coupon.
Sandwich? Yeah, my coupon for my sandwich.
Dude, you know what's weird?
What's that?
Check this
you're
out.
Not holding.
I'm freaking holding a Subway coupon in
that
my back pocket.
Is bizarre.
That's nuts.
Okay. Wow. No, that was very strange. All right. But no, drop that. Drop it, JP. Come on, dude. It's time to get your phone out and go to greatsongpodcast.com and subscribe to the show at your favorite player of choice. It's time to go to Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Great Song Pod. It's time to go to the Facebook group, Great Songs and the Great People Who Love Them Greatly. And it's time to go to Patreon, Patreon, patreon.com/Great Song Pod. If you want more of the show, if you want to just support the show, if you like what we're doing and you want to be part of supporting some independent creators, we are most grateful for that. And you'll get some bonus goodies to say thanks. Thank you for everybody who's listening. We're going to go right now and talk to Neil Morse. We'll be back to tuck you in on the other side.
This is the Great Song Podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, as promised, we are here with the incomparable, the one and only Neil Morse. Neil, thank you so much for joining us today on the Great Song Podcast. Such a pleasure.
Well, thank you. Glad to be here, man.
You are one of those guys for us that we just absolutely geek out over, and it's one of those things where, like, when you find somebody else in the wild that knows Neil Morse, it's an instant bond, you know what I mean? So I can't wait to be able to, for the people in our audience who already know and love your music, they're going to freak out. And then the people who don't yet know you are going to be like, this guy, holy cow. So love it when we get a chance to talk to an artist who has that sort of dual thing for us. So first of all, how are you?
I'm really good. I'm great. Practicing for right now for the Transatlantic gigs that are coming. I guess by the time this airs, those gigs will be over. So all my practicing, all my concern about, like, am I actually going to be able to play this with both hands? That will all be in the past, and probably in a lot have gone great. But right now, that's where I'm at. It's like, wow, how am I going to play all this stuff? You know, that's kind of where I'm at right now.
So how do?
But it's all good.
How do you, when you're prepping for something, or even when you're not, when you're always prepping for something, I know you well enough to know that you're always got something in the works. But how do you go about maintaining your chops and figuring out, like, how am I going to pull this off? Your music gets so complex. How do you go about, you know, making your hands do what you want them to do?
Well, I mean, it's practice, you know, like learning the runs and where to cross your thumb under and where, you know, like getting, it's, you know, trying to get the muscle memory going. That's what it is for everyone that's playing any kind of intricate music, you know. It's like practicing for a classical concert. You know, you got to train your fingers to do it, even if your mind's distracted, which takes a lot of time.
Wow. How do you fight that distraction? That's a great thing to put in there.
Well, I mean, I have to accept that I'm going to make a certain amount of mistakes and then enjoy myself anyway. I think people, they don't want to see somebody getting frustrated because they made mistakes. they'd rather see somebody make fun of themselves, I think, than that. The main thing that, you know, I try not to get too, when the gig comes, like, this is the preparation time, but when the gig comes, then I try to focus on delivering the song, you know, no, and having, you don't have to do the same thing with the lyrics that I do with the playing. I have to drill it so that it's on the tip of my tongue when I'm not thinking, you know, like certain songs that are just in your bones.
Sure.
Right. You don't have to think about it. You just start singing it. And so that's the way I have to have this stuff be. So I do a lot of drilling, a lot of listening. I walk and listen a lot. I learned that from John Anderson, actually, from Yes. We were talking about preparing. And he said, well, the thing I do the most is just listen. I'll go for long walks and just listen, really, with that kind of intensity. And so, yeah, it's all part of the, you know, preparing for a tour.
You mentioned John Anderson, so I got to talk about the Kaleidoscope album, which I love. Nothing like a good 24-minute track into the blue to start an album. That is Neil Morse right there. If you want to know anything, a 24-minute track to kickstart an album is the way to go. Buckle in, kids. So it's good stuff.
Well, you don't want to scare them off.
Well, ease them in.
Some people, if they don't know about, you know, this kind of music, you know, sometimes the length will be like, what? You know, a 40-minute song? Oh, no. But it's really, it's a lot of themes and instrumental passages and songs kind of strung together. It, you know, I mean, I mean, you could say it's a 40-minute song, but you could also you could cut it up into bits.
Yeah.
If you wanted to, you know, like there's a lot of albums like that. Like the second side of Abbey Road is one continuous thing, but they called it all those different songs. Funny thing was, we discovered early on that if we cut it into different songs and had the numbers of what the time was, the album didn't sell as well.
Really?
Wow. Like in the prog world,
yeah,
the longer the better.
Yeah.
Like, oh wow, it's 5 minutes. Yeah. One of the early Spock Spirit records, I think it was the Healing Colors of Sound piece. I decided to break it up and put ID points in between. And it wasn't nearly as popular, I think, partly because of that.
Wow. That's a weird thing to have to think about.
That's great. I love that. Well, you know, the Whirlwind album that came out in 2009, after that, you tried to ease them in with a 9-minute start, yeah, but it's still broken into parts. What goes into like writing a 5-minute song versus a 9-minute song versus a 24-minute song? Do you write them like when, let's just take Into the Blue, for instance, did you think, I have 24 minutes of idea I want to put into one, or did you think of it in all the different parts? How do you write that differently?
Well, that was a collaborative one. The transatlantic stuff is all, you know, so we work on it in the room. You know, I think some of those themes, we all had demos. Royna had demos, Pete has demos, I had demos. Mike is kind of the cleaner and the organizer of things. And so I don't remember now, but probably Mike said, hey, I was thinking maybe we should start off with this theme of Neil's and then maybe go into, and then we'll take a little germ kernel idea. Like, I think I had the idea on one of my demos for the do, 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 do thing, but I don't think it had drum breaks. Like, so then we a lot of times you'll take somebody's idea, and then in the room, you're like, well, why don't we extend that part? And what if we stop here? You know, it just becomes this whole crazy thing. And the same thing with Royna's stuff that we used later on in the song. What's the next part with the where he starts off with that really weird low voice thing? I love that. It's crazy. But anyway, yeah, so we work on it in the room, and it's all about, it's like, you know, you're just on a journey and you're like, well, yeah, that's cool up to there. Where should we go now? We'll get around, you know, like, well, what about if we did something like this? Or I was thinking maybe we could go into this guy's demo here and we'll try it and then go, yeah, that's a good place to go. And you just feel it out and try to, you know, sometimes somebody will want to end it and another guy will go like, oh, no, we can't leave out this thing. You know, so it's very collaborative and intuitive, and you just kind of go till it feels like, okay, I think it's ready to end. But you're really following the music where it wants to go as best you can.
Go ahead. I was going to say the Ronnie they're speaking of, Stolt, another guitar player, and another John Anderson tie-in kind of there, and Peter Travis from on bass. Yeah. I wasn't super familiar with Marillion, but man, I kind of went deep on them too. So thanks for kind of introducing. So good. I mean, Steve Rothery's a real good guitar player, and Steve Hogarth's a perfect vocalist for them. So thanks for introducing me to them. That's good stuff. But we got to talk about Mike Portnoy. Excellent. I mean, that's our guy.
Yeah, he's one of our, you know, he's one of everybody's top tier drummers.
I mean, so we're huge Dream Theater fans.
Yeah,
and huge like, everything Mike.
And you've been playing with him in various iterations, at least since like the late 90s. You maybe even before that, but as far as I know, at least from the late 90s. What's the sort of, you know, musical connection that keeps you guys coming back to each other as collaborators?
Well, I mean, it keeps being good. It keeps working. It keeps good.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we're really good friends. We're great admirers, I think, of each other's gifts. You know, we lean on each other. I know I lean on Mike for a lot of different things, even more than drumming. He's much more than a drummer.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
He's a, you know, he's really kind of a producer. He's a mastermind, you know, and So I've learned to, you know, I think we've learned to lean on each other, trust each other, you know, not that we don't ever butt heads, because you probably know, I mean, it's well documented some of the times that we've butted heads, but that's all part of the creative thing, man. You know, strong creative people are going to have strong creative opinions. And so, you know, it's part of that working it out, you know, that makes great records, I think. Mm.
That's good.
Yeah, that's great. And sometimes some of that, you know, friction can reveal kind of what's best about a song or an idea, or, you know, when somebody finally goes, all right, yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Well, you know, interestingly, as I learn more about how my favorite records were made and the conditions, a lot of times they were in the worst kind of tension that they'd ever been in as a band.
Yeah.
And I have to say, like, oh, I don't know, that's my favorite record. A lot of the time. So I try to remember that, because sometimes, you know, tension is, who needs it, right? You kind of get to a point where you're like, oh, God, who needs it? I don't really want to live with this, you know, because it's inside, you know, you'll feel it here. When Mike and I butted heads and came to a impasse about Similitude of a Dream, I mean, we're friends, and it's hard, you know, it's hard. And you're in the room with all these other people, and it's just like, it's gut-wrenching. Yeah. Really, it was. And then, you know, the next day, you know, we apologized to each other. We worked it out, and we finished the album, and it was just like smooth sailing from then on. But it's easy in those moments. You know, it's kind of like marriage. You know, you're going to have those times when you're wrestling with each other, and anyway, by the way, the word Israel means those that wrestle with God. Just thought I'd throw that in.
There we go.
Well, okay.
So there's sometimes.
Please.
So we're perfect.
Anyway, go ahead.
Perfect inroad to a conversation about faith and you know, the way that you sort of wear your faith on your sleeve, you know, as an artist. One of the really interesting things about you is, you know, is that it's like, you even lean into it, you know, and are very overt with, you know, the things, your subject material and the things you put out. But at the same time, you're putting out Transatlantic and Flying Colors and simultaneously working on like worship records and concept albums about, you know, the Apostle Paul, and like you're musically retelling Pilgrim's Progress. Like, you know, I know it's a really broad question, but how do you approach infusing your music with your faith like that?
Well, again, it's very instinctive. And I was just telling my wife the other day, there's been times when I wanted to say what I feel or what I wanted to say, maybe a little stronger or more directly, but I would start to write that and then kind of feel like, no, I don't think that's the way it wants to go. Mm. And so sometimes I'll speak very directly about Jesus. And then other times it's, you know, love made a way when there was no way out, right? You know, kind of more general thing that kind of everyone can accept. You know, everybody loves love.
Yeah.
Sure, yeah. Right? So it's all about just trying to discern the will of the Lord, and his will changes. I mean, he's the same.
Yeah.
Yesterday, today, and forever. But how he's interacting with people and what he's desiring to say, I think, differs. And so it's all about trying to ascertain that and to express it the best we can.
Dude, your 2003 album Testimony, Rob's like, Neil Morse is a Christian. I'm like, what? Me and Rob are both born again Christians, so we're like geeking out. We're like, it's so good. And then you add Carrie Livgren, and the one album, you got Keggy on there. Keggy's like you're top tier, but Keggy's my number one. Everybody knows I talk about Phil Keggy all the time. Love that guy. So we were so excited to hear that. And that's one of the reasons we're excited to talk with you on this today. Is like, we're kind of
I literally, out. I was at my, it was forever ago at this point, but I was newly married, visiting my in-laws in Texas. And I say something about Neil Morse, and my mother-in-law goes, "You mean the worship leader?" And I go, "What?" And she goes, "This guy." I'm like, "Yeah, that guy. What are we talking about here?" So it was a great little moment, but a marriage of two worlds that just exploded my brain. A lot of folks who have the kind of conversion experience that you had feel the need to kind of soften their edge. You know, and I have to say how happy it makes me that you continue to really crank up your amps and really go for it. You know, I can listen to an album like One and get the same, if I can use a churchy word, the same edification from it as if I would listen to like a Rich Mullins song or something like that. Did you ever struggle with the notion that you might need to kind of chill out after you got born again?
Well, no, you know, it's always, it's a daily selling out, right?
Yeah.
It's a daily, Lord, what do you want me to do? What do you want? You know, what do you want to say now? You know, and so that was the whole thing about Testimony, particularly was, you know, because the last album I'd made before that was Snow with Spock's Beard, and which is quite veiled. It's all about the Lord.
Yeah.
You know, Love Beyond Words, Open Wide the Floodgates, you know, all of that stuff, Solitary Soul and Wind at My Back. It's all about him. But in that time, I felt like with Spock, you know, it needed to be veiled. And I was just getting pent up and tired of not really telling it. Mm. You know, what is this Love Beyond Words that you're singing about, yeah. Right? Right. I really, at that time in my life, I was like, you know, I quit the bands and I was like, Lord, what do you want me to do? And I heard nothing for 4 months, I think. There was a stillness upon the waters. It was a strange time, not knowing what I was going to do next. If I was going to go work at Starbucks or if I was, what were we going to do? How were we going to make a living? What were you know, I had little kids that were, you know, it was quite a test of faith, really. And then all this music started to play in my mind that was like the music that I used to do. Mm-hmm. I started hearing all this progressive rock music in my head. It was just exploding. It was exploding so much I was at that time, I was recording onto a handheld cassette recorder. You know, so I was carrying it in my car and just going, all this stuff, like 5 90-minute cassettes just filled up. You know, I was like, and then I started to have the idea of telling my story to progressive rock music. And that was the first time that I really, you know, I mean, I really started to say what it really is about, which it was, you know, I knew it was Jesus, I say, on the, you know, towards the end, because
yeah.
I'm telling my whole story. But it was very satisfying. And then, you know, on into One and Question Mark and on and on. But
because you don't want to scare them off at the beginning. You said that to steal a quote right. from you. You don't want to scare them off at the beginning anyway. That's good.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, it's like, well, I don't know. You could liken it to a restaurant, you know, people walk in the restaurant, you don't like just, you know, hit him in the face with a piece of meat or something. You know,
here's our specialty.
Yeah. You want to have it be a nice environment and you know, like dress it up nice, as nicely as you can and tell the story as best you can in a way that will be received.
That's great. Every little table setting and every little aroma, it all leads to like the main course. You know, that's a great way to put that.
I do want to talk about your cover to cover album with Pleasant Valley Sunday, which I love. Obviously, the U2 song with Streets. Can't find my way home. The Steve Winwood Blind Faith song, which is like sweet and acoustic. Yeah. Till it isn't. It's like, oh, there we go. There's the melodic guitar nastiness I was looking for. Which was also, was that a bonus disc on the 2003 Testimony? Was that a bonus disc on that? Because I felt like I had heard that before.
I think it was.
Okay, cool. I was like, I think I'd heard that before somewhere. How do you pick your covers? Is that something where you go like, I love this song, I love this artist, or you're like, I can do this well? Like, how do you go into picking your covers?
Well, usually, if it's me and Mike and Randy, which most of those were, some of those early ones were ones that we had done before Randy was really that much a part. But from the One album on, Randy was. And this is sometimes how it goes at the dinner table on the first night. we'll start, you know, talking about the album. And then somebody will say, well, I've been thinking about the covers, because the covers are like, if we finish the album a night early,
there we go.
Then we can spend, the last day just having fun.
I like that. That's good.
Right. And doing, covers of whatever we feel like. So usually somebody will say, yeah, I've been thinking, man, I really want to cover this. And the other two guys will say, we can't think about that yet, man. We got to do the album first. I don't want to talk about that. Don't talk about the covers yet. And then like Sunday night, let's say, you know, we're finishing up. It's like, hey man, what songs do you guys want to cut? and kind of, it's usually like everybody picks a couple and then we'll talk about it. And I will sometimes say, hey, I'm sorry, I can't sing that. That's too high for me or whatever. Yeah, I can do that, but I need to do it in this key. You know, we'll discuss it. But mostly it's just about it, banging it out and having fun.
One thing I've always been really interested about you is I feel like you were ahead of the curve on some things with the Inner Circle and then eventually the Waterfall app. As far as presenting like subscription type, you know, model and material for fans to get music and access, you know what I mean? I felt like you were really ahead of, you know, ahead of a lot of other even industries in that, you know, you were since the beginning of like Netflix, before Netflix was streaming, you had digital material available, you know, for fans and stuff like that. What was your vision for that? Giving fans that kind of connectivity, and have you found it to even affect the way that you make music? Where, you know, all right, I've got to get some stuff out for Waterfall. You know, what's that been like for you?
Well, I started the Inner Circle, which is like a, you know, fan club basically, sure. 2005, I think. And there were a lot of different, you know, the reasons for it were numerous. Obviously one of them was to, you know, I was feeling not to tour. My kids were little and I was kind of feeling like I should be home more. I mean, I toured a little bit, but not hardly at all. So I need to have some kind of income stream, besides just, you know, whatever I was receiving from album royalties, which in the prog world is not that much, frankly. So there was that, obviously. But there was also, like, I'm a real sharer. Like, people that I'm in bands with sometimes get frustrated with me because I'll just share stuff that isn't perfect. If I think it's funny or cool or, you know, so there were a lot of, like, what I would call B or even C, you know, like not A-list products. There was, you know, concerts from here, films from there, or song demos, and just, you know, and so I like to share that stuff. So I thought, oh, it would be a great outlet for me, and I won't have to irritate on anybody else. It'll be kind of mine, and I can just give them kind of whatever I feel to give them. So that was a big part of it too. And, you know, I just thought it would be cool. It was a lot of work in the early days. We were sending actual CDs and DVDs in the mail. The only thing that was digital was the newsletter. So I had to come up with 6 releases a year. It was every other month. It still is every other month. And the Inner Circle is still going strong. And of course, now it's digital. But yeah, it's been great. What a great support. Waterfall came much later. I can't remember when it started. What, 2015, 16, something like that?
Yeah,
I think. I don't know. Right. Anyway, well, that started because, you know, started to experience how great streaming is for the listener.
Yeah.
But for myself, I was like sitting in my recliner and the music's playing and my wife asked me a question. And I push pause. I say, I answer a question. Then I push play. You know, I don't have to get up and pull the needle off the vinyl or, you know, any of that stuff. And then somebody calls, I answer the phone, and then the music stops. And then when I get back on the phone, the music starts again. And then I get in my car and I can just listen to the same piece of music right where it was. You know, it's very convenient. Streaming is incredibly convenient. And it sounds pretty good. And So I was thinking, wow, how can I provide this for my listeners and actually get paid a little bit?
Yeah, right.
We all know that, especially at a level like I'm at, I don't even think I would even show up on Spotify's radar as being worthy of sending a check to. You know what I mean?
Sure. It's like they've got that threshold, like
0.002 cents per stream. You know, you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
So that was part of it. I started to talk to people about, you know, creating my own streaming app, and that became Waterfall. And I'm really thankful for everybody that all the tech guys that volunteered to help put it together. It's amazing. It's amazing that it even got done. If anybody wants to get Waterfall, you go to waterfallstreaming.com.
There you go. Recommend it.
Waterfallstreaming.com and sign up.
All right.
That's my plug.
All right. One more question for me, and then we've got one more that we ask everybody.
So two quick questions, we'll let you get out.
As a guitarist, is there something you find that you do differently than like most other guitarists? Something that you maybe like you would say, I don't do this the right way, or I don't do this the way that like normal guitarists do it, but it works for you. Like I know when I play, I'm holding the pick wrong and I can't change that at this point in my life. You know, is there something like that about you as a guitarist that you do or as a keyboardist?
I think I'm holding the pick wrong as well.
Okay.
And then the guys that play really fast, they hold it, they get those little tiny picks and they, you know, yeah. I'm still more of a like big Dunlop,
yeah,
strummer.
I like how you said thing. The guys that play really fast, like you're not
like
one
you're
of
not
them,
fast. But, come on, you're a shredder. Come
but
on.
I know what you mean.
We get it.
Well, it's not natural for me. I learned a lot from the blues players of the 70s. So I do a lot more hammering on and bending, and I do a lot more with my left hand than my right hand, like Steve Morse and Eric Gillette do a lot of this picking of every note, which sounds amazing. But I can do that. I just have to really work at it. Like if I'm improvising a solo, I'm probably not just going to do that because it doesn't come naturally to me. There's one thing that's funny about me as a guitar player. There's something that people talk about, which is it's in the hands, man. Mm-hmm. Your tone is in the hands. Mm-hmm. With all the gear and all the different things, the main thing is that the tone isn't actually the way you play. And there's an old amp I had when we were learning in the late 70s and 80s called Sound City. I had this little Sound City amp, and it just had this really biting, like almost like punk rock biting sound to it. And so me and Rich Mauser, who mixes my stuff, it's like, here's the thing with me as a guitar player. It doesn't matter what amp I use. The Sound City is in my hands. It's in the way I act. Like I can play through a fractal like Eric Gillette. It'll still have a little bit of Sound City in it, man.
I love that.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's so good. Well,
it's funny.
One question we ask everybody. You're on tour. Either
okay.
Neil Morse Band, Transatlantic, whatever, Spock's Beard, whatever, and you go into a gas station, what is your gas station snack food of choice? And while you're thinking of your gas station snack food, I'll tell you, I get a Three Musketeers bar. When I was growing up, my mom would say you could have any candy bar you want, and it's the most ounces. What is your gas station snack food of choice?
Ooh, man.
We have stumped him with all the tough ones. The gas station one. It's thrown him a curveball.
Well, I really like pistachios, but most gas stations don't have pistachios.
Okay.
But if I was going to get like a candy bar or something, I'd probably get an Almond Joy.
Okay. There you go.
All right. I like it. Those are both, those both feel like Prague snacks, right? There's like a lot of textures, layers. You know, pistachios are kind of a little work at first.
You're going to hurt your teeth a little bit. You're going to leave with some teeth pain. Yeah. That's awesome.
That's awesome.
Neil, this has been so fun. So cool. Thank you so much.
Yeah, man.
You've been awesome.
Great talking with you guys, man.
Tell Roy thanks, too, that hooked us up. He's been great in the email communication and whatnot. So, thanks for all that. So,
great. Hey, on a side note, are you guys coming to Morse Fest? It's right here. You're in Tennessee, man. You're in Middle Tennessee.
Yeah, we need to be there. Yeah
we definitely
need to do that. Yes. We'll say yes. Yeah, we'll see you there.
That'd be great.
We'll come high five you. We'll find you.
Excellent.
Good stuff.
Excellent. Right. I think, by the way, just between us, I think they're about to put some tickets on sale. Because there's like some left and we want to blow them out. So
okay.
We'll do it.
Come on. It's going to be epic. Absolutely epic.
Sounds awesome. Good. Rock and roll.
I mean, the whirlwind with real strings. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Sounds awesome. Thanks, Dale. Looking Amazing. Forward to it, bud.
Yeah.
All right.
All right, man.
Thanks. Take care of yourself.
Take care.
Cheers. Bye.
This is the Great Song Podcast.
And that was the incredible, amazing, often imitated, never duplicated Mr. Neil Morse. Such a cool thing that we got to talk to him and finally scratch this itch to cover his music. And I hope you guys enjoyed him as much as you have enjoyed the clips and the music of his. But anyway, how cool is this? I don't know. I'm stumped for words. Like I'm literally like,
it was great.
This is just so stinking awesome. So thank you guys for listening. We'll be back next week as season 11 rolls on with more great music, more incredible artists. A change of gears next week is coming. So be ready.
We just drew you in with all things prog and you're like, this is my kind of show.
Yeah.
Get ready. We're taking you on a turn.
That's right.
There will be guitar.
There will be another incredible guitar player next week, but it's headed in a different direction. So we'll see you guys then. Until then, I'm Rob.
I'm JP.
Go listen to some music.